Now, a very engaging conversation with Jenny McCarthy, originally from Cork. We had this conversation before 11 o'clock. Let me just synopsize it, if I can, with Jenny listening. Jenny spent 25 years in the UK, built a successful career there. First of all, as a specialist trauma nurse and later as a rapid response police officer. But in what I imagine is a space of little more than a year and a half, judging by her story, her life was turned upside down. She lost her mother. Her marriage broke down. She was medically retired from the career she loved. Then a close friend died from breast cancer. And then Jenny herself was diagnosed with breast cancer. She was a single mother of two daughters at this stage, facing surgery, treatment and recovery while trying to keep life as normal as possible for her children. In fact, in my estimation, with almost messianic devotion, she gave unparalleled priority to making sure the two children were unscathed through her negative experiences, shall we say. And we brought the story, Jenny, up to where you rang the bell, and that's a big, big moment in the journey of any cancer patient.
Yeah, it is. That's kind of the most significant part. That's the bit you're aiming to get to.
Yeah, that's kind of all can be well.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get to ring that, you know, kind of, you're there.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's, I think, for any cancer care survivor, that is the ultimate goal.
Now, in the interest of bringing balance to the story, because you've gone through the hard bit now, most of the negative stuff, you're at the lowest part of the arc of or the valley, if you like. You make the decision to come home to Ireland after 25 years in the UK.
Yeah.
Easy or tough decision to make, or did it come naturally?
No, probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make in my life, because I didn't want to move home. I had you know, an amazing life in the UK, and I was very happy there. But from the perspective of the children, I knew for them, I had to move back and at least make that effort. And I had said to them, you know, shall we do this? We could try 3 years. 3 years would be the cutoff. And they were totally in agreement, even though they were young children. I literally...
Were they still 3 and 6 at this stage?
No.
Maybe 4 and 7?
Five and eight.
5 and 8. But integrated with friends and classes and activities and things.
Yeah. Now, I was lucky in the sense that COVID obviously was there at the time, so kind of schooling, they had been out of school for a good 9 months. My youngest was obviously not old enough to have set secure friendships at that point. We'd been out of school for a good 9 months at that point, so it wasn't as kind of hard for the children, I suppose. Plus they knew when we were moving back, we would go back and visit all of our friends. We were back a few months ago. You know, I try and get back a couple of times a year. They're still in touch with everybody.
So they weren't unfamiliar with Ireland either, or were they?
Oh, no. No, goodness, no. We, like, from when they were born, I was travelling back 2-3 times a year.
Okay. So if you put everything through the filter of reality, really, all of the stuff you went through, you must have made the decision that once I leave the UK and go back and my little girls are in agreement, I'm going to rebuild my life from scratch, but by God, am I going to do it?
Yeah, with absolutely no regrets. So we left York at 9 o'clock on the Monday morning. We arrived into Dublin at 6 o'clock that evening. I had bought a house online that I'd never seen. I collected the keys to that house at 9 o'clock that night, and we walked into the house. I've got a gorgeous little video of the kids running in. And that was it. That was the start of our new life. Everything.
This is our new place. This is our new start.
Yep. Everything from scratch. Probably one of the best decisions that I have ever made.
How long ago was that?
5 years ago.
Okay. So tell us about the journey since. Let's bring some balance to the thing here and give some positive messaging to those. People's hearts are breaking for you already, like.
I know. And the thing is, I don't, like, this isn't a woe me story. It's not meant to be
far
like
from
that
it,
at all.
No.
Yeah, it's more that you can lose everything in a moment. Like, never take anything for granted, you know, at all. And my kind of, for me, it's, my journey has been about losing everything, including myself, losing my identity. That was huge. To obviously having two children who, you know, I was trying to be the strong person and, you know, show them you can do this. But in the meantime, you're crying in the shower, or, you know, you're talking to your friends, or, you know, but it can be done. And that's the point I'm trying to get across, like that resilience isn't something that any of us are born with. It's built over time through, you know, unfortunate mishaps and traumas. But I ended up going into a job that I have never, ever done in my life before. And I absolutely love it. And I serve customers. Nobody wants to stab me or attack me or, you know, verbally abuse me. I love it. I do talks, you know, around the country with different companies and, you know, corporate events and health and well-being talks. I have a wonderful network of friends. I've got my family and I do what I want. And don't get me wrong, I have bad days just like everybody else, but learning how to cope with them. You know, I love the sauna and sea dips, therapy, which I know there's a big taboo with, you know, therapy and counselling. That has been my saving grace and asking for help. And no matter how bad things seem right now, I always say, as long as you can get up, make a cup of tea, put one foot in front of the other and just surround yourself with positivity. Like, what you see is what you get with me. There's no fakeness. I'm happy, genuinely happy. And if I'm cross, I go quiet, which is rare. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be done. You can lose everything. And don't get me wrong, I do fear all the time if I feel a lump or, you know, if I get sick, you know, what's going to happen to me, what's going to happen to my girls. But we have such an amazing network of friends. I've got some of the most amazing people in my life. You know,
are they new friends or old friends, Jenny?
Both, actually. My friends in the UK, I'm just eternally grateful for, because they were there for the whole lot of actually what everything went on. And then when I've moved back, you know, the children have made new friends, I've made new friends. And again, when I had my surgery a couple of years ago, I was extremely unwell and was in intensive care for a week after that. And just the lengths people went to help me. It's like they say, and I've never heard the saying before, it takes a village. So I had a village in the UK and I have a village in Ireland.
I have a friend, Flash, and he would subscribe to your ideal. He'd do it in slightly more Cork parlance, though, and with a Cork accent. He treats every day like this. He says, if you can get up in the morning and put the two paws out in the ground, you're winning, and open the bulbs, you're winning straight away.
And that is it. And that's the whole point. Like, I always say, like, I mean, I'm super healthy. I work out, everything. And there were times, don't get me wrong, where I just sat down on the ground and cried because I was like, why? It just seemed to be one thing after another. And just literally before I left as well, a really good friend of mine in COVID got diagnosed with cancer again. She passed away within the week of me arriving back in England. And I was heartbroken. And it just seemed all this doom and gloom that I couldn't step out of, no matter what way I turned. And then I kind of, like your friend Flash, you just have to pick the positives, surround yourself with positivity, you know. And I always say, you know, the hardest lessons in life aren't taught, they're learned. And that's kind of my motive now for kind of speaking out and just saying to people, ask for help. You know, do what you want to do. You get one life. You really do. And I have no regrets. I have no angst against anybody. I should do, but I don't. But literally, like, I've got a big birthday coming up during the summer. And even there now, a few minutes ago, one of the ladies in the shop was like, what are you going to do for it? I was like, I might jump out of a plane. And she burst out laughing. My friends, none of them will do it with me. But I want to do crazy stuff like that because you're only here once.
I know. Can I ask you, and this may be a slightly personal question, without the two little girls and the desire to do right by them and the love for them, how much do you think you could have achieved? Would you have been down and out for the count, as it were? Would you have pulled through?
Sorry, you'd have to repeat that again there. Sorry, the phone went all funny.
Sorry, without the love, of the obvious love you have for your two little girls, without them being present in your life, would you have pulled through as successfully, or would you at any stage felt you might have just given up?
No, I wouldn't have done. I hit, and it was the first time I spoke out loud about this, because my biggest fear in life is depression and stuff like that. I hit rock bottom not long after surgery. And my kids, I hadn't told them about it at all. They knew nothing about my cancer. In fact, when I got diagnosed, the first thing I did was walk out of the hospital and booked a holiday for the three of us to go on holiday, so because I knew the next year was going to be a write-off. When I hit the ultimate low, and I remember sitting in the bedroom, my sister crying, saying, I can't do this anymore. And then, like, without even knowing, the two kids ran into the room and they had my dresses and shoes on. And I remember looking, going, oh, my God. Like, you know, just the innocence. And I just thought, I couldn't. And for them, I have to say, they kept me going, actually. And, you know, I know some people don't have children, but they might have a cat or they might have a dog, you know, or they mightn't even have that, but they'll have one person that's there for them. And that's why I always say, you know, people going through addiction or hard times, as long as they know they've got one person that you can lean on. And luckily for me, I had quite a lot.
There's an analogy in the game of poker, which you're just kind of alluding to there, and it reminded me of the analogy. You're not out as long as you have a chip and a chair. If you've one chip left and you're still sitting at the table, you're still in the game.
And, you know, like, I actually totally agree with that, because, you know, one, like, if you met me, like, I'm, you know, larger than life, I'm happy out, you would never have any idea what's gone on in my world. But I just kind of think, well, look, you know, you don't let the past define you. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be more to come, you know, that will happen. But I just want my story to get out there so that I can help people through my talks, through mentoring, and just let people know right here and now, because I know there's loads that, you know, it is crap. It is horrendous, but it does get better. And like somebody said to me when I was in the depths of despair, and I'll never forget it, it's about to get worse, Jen. And I remember thinking, are you actually kidding me? And I even said this to a lady recently at work, and her face dropped. And I said, you need to hear that, because when you hear it, you'll know.
You're ready for it.
It's only up from there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad. It's
hard crazy to tell somebody who's in the depths of depression and feeling really isolated and heartbroken or whatever that, you know, there's worse to come, like, but you will get through that too.
Yep. And there will be, and I'm sure there'll be more for me. But at the end of the day, I'm going to just grab life with both hands. I'm going to try and use, you know, what's happened to me to help other people. And that's the one thing I want to be able to do through, like, talks, through, like I said, the coaching, the mentoring, anything. Because it's the worst thing in the world to be sad, lonely, and not have anywhere to look or anybody to talk to. And I have this 8-minute thing that I do with my friend next door. She'll laugh now when she hears it. It's called the 8-minute rule. So for those that are on their own, as long as you've got one person, you can pick up the phone and just say, are you free for 8 minutes? Now, I usually text her saying, are you free for 8 minutes? And then in brackets, plus or minus 84 hours, because it could go on for longer.
Plus or minus a bottle of wine.
I know, yeah. And I just think 8 minutes, because sometimes, and this doesn't go to just single people, to any of us, you could pick up the phone when you're in the depths of despair and make one phone call. And I saw this a lot, actually, in domestic abuse and the police. There'll be one phone call where somebody will make